the favor, as they will soon know you are not to be messed with. B. Move on. Creating more pain won't solve any problems. Answer key. Mostly A's? Villain. Though you might not feel the urge to go on a crime spree, you possess all the tools you need to become a serious villain. Some may call you selfish, but you think you're really just looking out for yourself. Just bear in mind that stories are fiction. The villains in real life face real consequences. Mostly B's. Hero. Welcome to the club. True, you might not always get the recognition you want or deserve as you're busy looking out for others, but people can rest easy knowing you're always there to help. Beautiful Venom by Cindy Pawn. What did it feel like to have your body slowly turn into stone? May dew slithered between the dust-coated statues of gods and goddesses and knocked them over, one by one, with a swipe of her powerful serpent body. They were large figures and crashed with thunderous noise. She avoided the tumbling stone fragments with finesse, smooth and graceful as a dancer, sliding between their ruins. Dust obscured her vision, rising high toward the pitched temple roof. She paused in front of the lone statue that remained, and as the air cleared, the goddess of purity's impassive face emerged, perfect lips pressed together in an enigmatic smile, the orbs of her marble eyes blank and unyielding. She stood tall and majestic, the folds of her white robe carved to drape elegantly over her frame. One hand was pressed over her heart, and the other arm was extended, palm lifted heavenward, as if in benevolence or forgiveness. But May Dew knew the truth. From the time she was just a girl, May Dew had prayed to the goddess of purity, believing her to be just and the protector of women. But no longer. The goddess's betrayal still stung. May Dew had thought that her heart had grown as cold and hard as all the mortals she had turned into stone, but the goddess of purity's image pained her like a fresh-cut wound. She fought the urge to cower and sob, remembering the humiliation and hurt like it had happened yesterday, and she was once again a helpless girl with some other name. The snakes on her head hissed, thrashing until her scalp burned. May Dew raked her yellowed nails over her face, crusted with warts and pustules, eyes roving to the dark corners of the derelict temple. She listened, the rough green scales of her arms prickling. A man was approaching. She had been on the run for centuries, but her legend and infamy had only grown, as had the number of those who were determined to slay her. Always men. She knew they pursued her with murder on their minds, for there was no capturing the evil May Dew alive. Death was the only solution, the only ending to her story. Yet she had eluded them this long, had suffered their taunts and curses, the burning and cutting, the stones hurled at her head. After years of abuse, she had turned on her persecutors, wanting vengeance and enjoying grim satisfaction in their deaths. She refused to remain a victim. Morning light filtered through the broken lattice windows above, penetrated the eroded wood of the massive door panels. The temple door scraped open, and she flexed her hands. There had been rumors. Rumors whispered enough that they had even reached her ears during her solitary travels through the provinces. The mortals spoke of a great warrior, trained by the masters, said to be faster and more agile than any man, inhumanly strong with his bare hands and lethal with a weapon, a true hero, a hero who had been blessed by the gods. He would be the one to end May Dew's reign of terror. Is this him? Has he finally come? The rotten door slammed closed again, and dust swirled, glittering in the sunlight. The shape of a man emerged in the gloom, and she was reminded of Hai Xin, his powerful presence blotting out the light. May Dew lifted high on her coil, and the snakes on her head writhed with anticipation. She was ready to meet her match. Chia Mei Feng sat very still in the deep, curved-back chair as the royal portraitist used brush and ink to capture her likeness. The artist had thoughtfully adjusted where she would sit in her family's opulent main hall, pulling the carved chair away from the others. The Chia Manor was the most extravagant in their town of Qinha, but despite the family's high status as rich merchants, it was not every day that they received a visitor from the palace. Her mother had made certain of securing this one opportunity to present Mei Feng's portrait to the emperor, for a young woman could not climb higher than becoming an imperial consort, one of over 1,000 brides the emperor kept at the palace. The artist had slid a door panel open, seeking the right amount of light before he began. She saw him glance at the scrolled paintings adorning their walls, prized originals by masters long dead. Her mother, Lady Jia, flitted behind the man, her silk sleeves billowing with her nervous movements. Mei Feng wished her mother would stand still. She was making her anxious. Lady Jia's pacing was accompanied by a string of dialogue she seemed incapable of stopping. "You must paint so many beautiful women for the Emperor, Master Yang," she said. "It is such an important and honored task to travel these provinces to find new brides for him. I mean, we rely on your skill to convey our daughter's beauty. How can a man, even an emperor, not fall in love with such a perfect face?" Her mother swept a graceful arm toward Mei Feng, her dark brown eyes bright with pride. Mei Feng winced inwardly, but she had been schooled too long in the art of being a proper young mistress to let it show in her features. Instead, she kept the same faint curve of a smile on her lips, letting her eyes gaze dreamily into an unseen distance. "My daughter's beauty is known throughout the province," her mother prattled on. "But beyond that, she has been well taught in all the arts that will please our emperor, embroidering, singing, dancing, and playing the zither. Mei Feng can recite and write poetry, has been instructed on how to properly serve tea should the emperor desire it, and knows all the ways of pleasing him in the bedchamber." Mei Feng almost closed her eyes, but she had better control than that. Yet she couldn't prevent the warm blush that spread from her face to her neck until the tips of her ears felt on fire. Oh, how she wanted to leap from the chair and run back to her quarters, tear all the pins from her hair, carefully arranged in artful coils and plaits laden with rubies and jade. Horrifyingly, her mother did not stop. She did not even pause for breath. "I personally taught her everything from the Book of Making myself." Lady Jia dipped her chin coquettishly. "Mei Feng knows what she needs to do to quickly become with child, make healthy sons for the emperor." Mei Feng's hands were folded in her lap, resting against her skirt, gorgeously paneled in pale green and pink silks, embroidered with delicate butterflies. Her fingers tightened, lacquered nails digging into the backs of her hands. How much longer?
"I'm sure she is as fertile as a sow with 9 pairs of teats," Master Yang said.
Her mother drew a sharp intake of breath, covering her mouth with one sleeve. Mei Feng blinked twice. She did not let the shock touch her composed face.
"But I do not choose the emperor's imperial consorts for him," the artist went on in a gruff voice. "What I do is try to paint the best representation that I can of the young women brought before me."
He flicked the ink from his brush with an annoyed turn of his wrist into a cerulean bowl filled with water. It rested on an enameled tea table that depicted pink peonies nestled within verdant leaves, one of Mei Feng's favorite pieces in their grand main hall.
"You are ruining my concentration, Lady Jia,"
Master Yang went on.
"If I make a mistake and blot the painting by accident, I will not be there to explain to His Majesty that the mark is not a giant wart or mole with a hair growing from it like a cat's whisker."
Lady Jia snapped her fan open, flapping it to give herself some air. She appeared ready to faint. Mei Feng's serene smile might have lifted a fraction at the corners. She loved her mother. She truly did. But Lady Jia could be a little willful and pushy when it came to arranging a betrothal for her youngest daughter. "Well then," Lady Jia said, You've made yourself clear, Master Young. I'll leave you in peace.
She turned in a flourish of silks and gardenia perfume and retreated down the wide steps into the courtyard below. The artist dipped his brush into the inkwell, gathering the ink he needed on the brush head, before giving Mei Feng a playful wink.
"Shall we start over, then?"
he asked. Mei Feng wandered the lush grounds of the Chia Manor trailed by her two handmaids, Ripple and Orchid, meandering through the estate's magnificent courtyards. The royal portraitist had taken all morning to paint two likenesses of her. Lady Chia had exclaimed in pleasure when she saw the final pieces, praising the artist. But when the man offered to show Mei Feng, she had declined to see them. Her mother had tilted her chin in disapproval. Mei Feng knew she risked being rude, but she didn't have the heart. Her fate now rested upon a stranger's ink strokes on rice paper, and whether or not another stranger found her features pleasing. She wanted to marry well and make her parents proud, but a part of her hoped that the emperor would not like the look of her, for she was not yet ready to leave her family forever. Spring was in full splendor, and the gardens were a riot of fragrance and color. She passed peach trees, their branches laden with deep pink blossoms, stopping in front of a clear pond. Water trickled from the rockwork built above. The two handmaidens chatted behind her as Mei Feng fed the orange and silver-speckled fish. A large toad she had named Grouch because of his wide, frowning mouth, plopped loudly into the water, in hopes of finding something he could eat, too. She laughed at the sight of him kicking his fat legs and continued on to her favorite spot among all the courtyards, the Pavilion of Quiet Contemplation. Lifting her emerald skirt, she climbed the stone steps and settled onto a bench, one that offered her a view of the crabapple trees. Wisteria wound their way up the columns of the pavilion in bursts of lavender and periwinkle, dousing the air with its sweet, peppery scent. Grouch the toad croaked from the pond, deep and satisfied, the noise carrying to her on a soft breeze. Birds hidden overhead twittered and argued. Mei Feng leaned back, releasing a long breath, letting her arms rest heavy at her sides. She was never alone, but at least she was not being presented or observed for a small time. She treasured these rare moments of peace. A hush blanketed the garden, so subtle that she didn't notice at first. But suddenly, the sounds of the courtyard had fallen away until even the rustling of leaves had disappeared. Mei Feng froze, the flesh on her arms pimpling. Where had her handmaids gone? Searching the tranquil surroundings with a sweeping glance revealed nothing. The two girls were nowhere to be seen. Ripple was prone to playing jokes, and Mei Feng almost rose, determined to find the errant handmaids, when the appearance of a figure farther down a stone-paved path stopped her. A young man approached, a stranger, and her pulse quickened. Mei Feng clutched her skirt between damp fingers, not knowing what to do. The Chia estate was immense, and she resided within the inner quarters, where men were not allowed. As an unwed girl, she was meant to be safe here, sequestered, hidden away from prying eyes. "Ripple?" Mei Feng called out, hoping the handmaid would appear from behind a tree trunk, or from where she had been crouched behind the rocks. "Orchid?"
"They are dozing for a while,"
the stranger said. He climbed the steps of the pavilion, stopping at the entrance.
"Dozing?"
she whispered. He smiled at her and bowed formally, elegant and assured.
"Do not worry for them."
"Who are you?" she asked.
The young man looked to be 18 or 19 years, dressed in a long, deep blue robe, his black hair pulled back in a topknot. At 17 years old, Mei Feng had only ever met a handful of young men, all family, cousins or uncles. She had not seen many of them, but she knew that this young man was very handsome, with a glow about him that seemed as if he were lit from within. Without so much as asking, he settled beside her on the stone bench. Shocked, she sidled away from him, filled with both fear and fascination. Inexplicably, the air seemed to waver around them, and for a brief moment, Mei Feng thought she heard the distant roar of the sea, tasted the tang of ocean mist on her lips.
"You can call me Haishin," he said.
His voice was warm and pleasant, filling the unseen recesses of her mind and her heart.
"Haishin," she repeated, somehow finding the words, enveloped in his charm. "Hai for the sea, but which character for Shin? Does it stand for star or heart?"
Smiling, he brushed the back of her knuckles with his fingertips, sending a pleasant shock through her body. It had been unexpected and unacceptable. No man had ever touched her before, much less so intimately. But when he carefully drew her fingers open, one by one, then covered her palm with his own, she didn't resist.
"You are as intelligent and curious," he said, "as you are beautiful, I see."
Mei Feng's breath hitched in her chest. She knew she should leave, but she felt entranced, seduced by the warmth of his hand against her skin.
"What are you doing here?"
He didn't answer for a long moment, concentrating on her hand, sweeping his thumb in slow circles over her open palm, then tracing an index finger across her inner wrist until she shivered, flustered by the tangle of unfamiliar sensations assailing her.
"I come," he said, "because I heard that you are the most beautiful maiden in Anning Province."
His fingertips trailed up her inner forearm.
"The rumors were not exaggerated."
She should have snatched her arm away, screamed for help, but she felt curiously docile. All her attention, her entire being, was focused on where Hai Xin's skin touched hers.
"Oh."
She swallowed, staring at his hand caressing her arm. It was a beautiful hand, strangely perfect, well-manicured and strong. The hand of a noble? Or a well-known scholar? Hai Xin gave her a small tug, and she shifted, facing him on the bench. He cupped her face briefly. Then his fingers were stroking the nape of her neck. Mei Feng's head tilted back, her eyes closed. Her mind had been bled blank, as if someone had carried all her thoughts away. Nothing existed in this world except for Hai Xin's touch. His lips brushed against her earlobe, his breath warm and sweet, and she trembled with pleasure. Suddenly, the atmosphere changed, and he pulled away, breaking their embrace. She felt robbed of his touch, aching, as the sounds of the world came crashing through.
"Mei Feng!" her mother called. "Where are you?"
Lady Chia's wooden heels clacked against the cobbled path.
"Interrupted," Hai Xin said. "Regrettably."
He lifted her hand and brushed his lips over her knuckles. Everything felt right again, his supple mouth against her flesh.
"Next time, then,"
he said, and rose. Hai Xin glided down the pavilion steps just as her mother rounded the corner. Mei Feng's mouth had gone dry, her heart beating an unsteady beat against her chest. Her breaths came fast, erratic and shallow. Her mother would scream now, call for the sentries who guarded their home. Instead, she said nothing. As Hai Xin strolled past Lady Chia down the same garden path, Mei Feng swore she saw his blue robe sleeve brush against her mother's bare arm, but Lady Chia acted as if she did not see him, acted as if Hai Xin did not exist at all. Squeezing her eyes shut, Mei Feng didn't know if she was frightened or relieved.
"Daughter," her mother exclaimed, "why are you hiding here? It's time for the midday meal."
Only 3 days passed before Hai Xin appeared again, this time in Mei Feng's bedchamber. She had lived those days in between in a daze, wondering if she had hallucinated the episode, wondering if she was somehow going mad. Her thoughts had dulled, heavy and sluggish, but her flesh had come alive, sensitive, tender. Mei Feng went about the rituals of each day, having her hair brushed and arranged by Ripple, drawing on her cool underclothing and silk skirt as if she were in a trance. Her body tingled, pinpricks of anticipation dancing across her skin, longing to be touched again. Fear and caution lurked in some dark corner of her mind, caged and muted. She knew Hai Xin, this strange, seductive man, was dangerous. But it was a distant concern, a problem she knew she could not solve. Better not to dwell upon it. She was lying in bed, her hair spread like a fan over her brocaded cushion, when Mei Feng felt his presence. Hai Xin's silhouette appeared behind the fine-spun gauze of her bed curtains. He exuded power and desire. His hunger for her was tangible. It gripped her heart like a vice, tightening her throat. She tried to lurch away from him, but lay like stone upon the platform bed, unable to move. Hai Xin had used his sorcery, immobilizing her. There was no escape, nowhere to hide. He slipped beneath the silk sheet like a whisper, hot hands twined in her loose hair within a breath. Only a husband was allowed to see a woman's hair unbound. Only a husband had the privilege to touch it. He pressed himself against her, whispering into her ear, promising wedded bliss and beautiful children, promising paradise. His lips and fingertips roamed across her throat, over her abdomen, brushed against her breasts. She gasped with pleasure, even as the fear in the deep recesses of her mind expanded, screamed in warning.
"You taste as sweet as you look, beautiful girl,"
Hai Xin murmured against her hair. "One of your greatest assets is your beauty, daughter," her mother had told her over and over again.
"Our brood will be stunning,"
he said, then kissed her so deep and long she couldn't breathe. Mei Feng felt his excitement. She remembered all those line drawings she had pored over endlessly in the Book of Making, tutored by her mother. She willed her arms to move, to shove him off, but her body betrayed her. A door panel slid aside, and Orchid's voice broke the oppressive silence that had wrapped the bedchamber. There had been no other sounds except for Hai Xin's beguiling words between his kisses and the roar of her heartbeat within her ears.
"Mistress," Orchid called out in her lilting voice, "I've come to douse your lanterns."
Light slippered feet crossed the reception hall toward the bedchamber. In an instant, Hai Xin vanished as if he had never been there at all. The only indications of his presence were the lingering heat of his touch against her feverish skin and the tang of salt in the air, a whiff of the sea.
"Your virginity is the one virtue more valuable than your beauty," her mother had also repeated time and again. "The emperor expects his brides to be presented to him untouched, pure. Don't ruin it by dabbling with some stupid boy."
Thank the goddess for Orchid's arrival, Mei Feng thought as she feigned sleep. It had not gone that far. She clutched the crumpled sheet over her chest with shaking arms, finally able to move her limbs again, and did not let the tears slide down her face until the handmaid had retreated from the bedchamber, leaving her in darkness. Nowhere was safe. Mei Feng knew that if she kept her handmaids close at all times, they could be magically lured away. She knew that if she locked herself in her bedchamber, or even the stone cellar beneath the manor's large kitchen, Hai Xin would still find her. She had no inkling who she was up against, except that he was no ordinary man. Lighting incense each morning, she prayed to the goddess of purity for strength and safety. The goddess was known as the Virgin and symbolized wisdom and peace. Girls often sought her guidance in matters of the heart and marriage and prayed to her for protection. Mei Feng beseeched to be shown some way to escape or defeat Hai Xin. She was certain he was some monster or demon disguised as a handsome young man. She spoke to no one about her troubles. 4 days after Hai Xin had come to her in the bedchamber, an excited Orchid dashed into the main hall, where Mei Feng was taking tea with her mother. Ripple ran right at the other handmaid's heels.
"Lady Chia! Lady Chia!" Orchid exclaimed, out of breath. "A message! A royal message sent from the Imperial Palace!"
She proffered the gold tube, ornately etched with a deep green dragon bearing 5 claws on each foot, a symbol only the Emperor could use. Her mother sprang up, snatching the tube from the handmaid. The two girls shuffled backward, but did not leave the hall. Her mother opened the tube and retrieved the rolled message. Mei Feng could see the dark sweep of calligraphy across the rice paper and the deep red ink of the imperial seal in several places on the page. Lady Jia read with care, then read again. She lifted her glowing eyes and said, "Dear daughter, you are to be wed to the Emperor. You will be an imperial consort. The gods and goddesses have smiled down on our family." Her mother swept across the stone floor and clasped Mei Feng to her as the two handmaids thrust their faces into their palms and wept for joy. Mei Feng would need to take servants with her to the palace, so the two girls' fates had been altered drastically too, with one royal decree. Lady Jia released her and touched Mei Feng's cheek. She winced, remembering Hai Xin's uninvited touch, stoking desire on her body while instilling fear in her soul. But her mother didn't notice that she had recoiled. "A royal envoy will arrive in 3 days to escort you to the palace." Lady Jia turned to the handmaids, waving them off with her elegant hands. "Don't just stand there mewling. We must get ready." The two girls dashed off, chattering, their words tumbling over each other. Her mother glided down the main hall steps, likely with 100 tasks to delegate before Mei Feng's leave-taking. She was left alone, standing in the middle of the empty main hall, clutching her arms around herself. The Qia Manor was caught in a chaos of activity in the days following, before the royal envoy's arrival. Mei Feng was thrust along by the frenetic activity, like a blossom dropped into a river and propelled on a strong current. She was led from one place to the next and nodded in acquiescence often, as her mother arranged for everything to be ready before she left home. Things were so rushed and hectic, Mei Feng never had a quiet moment to herself, or with her parents, to say a private farewell. Instead, when the royal envoy arrived with a grand carriage drawn by 6 magnificent black horses, followed by a procession of imperial guards carrying the emperor's crimson banner, she only had time to clasp her mother's and father's hands briefly, holding back the sting of tears. She didn't want to go.
"We are so proud of you, daughter," her father said, his smile broad and plain, despite his thick beard.
Her mother squeezed her fingers.
"Your fortune shines on the entire family, Mei Feng. Write us. Visit when you can."
She could return to see her family once a year, if the Emperor allowed it.
"Yes, father," she whispered. "Yes, mother, I will."
Then the envoy guided her into the royal carriage, and Ripple and Orchid were helped into a plainer one right behind that was filled with the chests they had packed for Mei Feng. After an official decree was recited by the envoy, and a trumpet sounded, heavy curtains fell across the windows of the carriage, and it rumbled off. She couldn't even peer under the heavy brocaded cloth to see her parents or her home one last time as they sped away from everything she had ever known. They traveled swiftly toward the imperial city, stopping at inns that were soon cleared for the royal procession. Mei Feng was treated well, given the most delectable food at every meal, but she had little appetite. She missed the company of Orchid and Ripple, but was kept in solitude within the royal carriage, like something special and precious, a rare and caged bird. They were rolling through the countryside, surrounded by silver birch and colorful wildflowers. Mei Feng had cut a small hole in the carriage's thick curtain when they lurched to a sudden stop, thrusting her forward on the plush, cushioned bench. She grabbed the edge of it to prevent herself from falling off. Men in her procession shouted at one another from without, their voices muffled. Scrambling over to the carriage door, she peered through the cut in the curtain. Mei Feng could see nothing but fields of golden grass nestled beneath gentle, sloping hills. The gruff voices of her imperial guards argued outside. Something blocked their path, and they were deciding what was the best course of action. Then, in a sudden whoosh, their voices were gone. Disappeared. As with the gentle rustle of the swaying grass and the distant birdsong, Mei Feng was left in a complete and dreadful silence. She knew what this meant. The thick brocaded curtains were stripped from her carriage, and sunshine pierced through, stinging her eyes. She turned her head from the brightness as the door crashed open, torn from its hinges. A dark shadow filled the doorway, blotting out the sunlight. Mei Feng's chest seized in terror. Without a word, Hai Xin yanked her into his powerful arms. They felt like flesh, but his hold was as strong as stone, immovable like a mountain. He glided low across the wild grasses into the fields, flying, and she was carried like a rag doll against his chest. She could hear no heartbeat there.
"The Emperor will have to find some other girl,"
Hai Xin said.
"I have my own plans for you."
He set her down on her feet in the field, but she clung to him, too weak from shock and fear to stand. Hai Xin took this as an invitation and bent over to kiss her, capturing her lips and her breath. She knew for certain now what he wanted. He had whispered cajolingly about children and wedded bliss, but it was clear what Hai Xin was truly after, what his aim had been from the start. Mei Feng shoved away from him and stumbled back. "No," she said.
"No?"
His black eyebrows lifted, and an amused smile curved his mouth. She turned from him and ran. But the golden grasses were tall here, growing above her knees, and she was disoriented and frightened. A strange stupor, like spilled ink, spread across her mind. Mei Feng tripped and crashed to her knees. Hai Xin pinned her to the ground before she could blink. "No!" she shouted at him, the declaration reverberating powerfully, ricocheting through the empty countryside.
"I am Hai Xin," he said, and the words filled her whole being so her body tremored with them. "God of the sea."
Mei Feng forced herself to look into his face, stared into his eyes. Light spilled forth from his gaze, but darkness, too, swirled within. It was like falling into the sun, like drowning in a star-filled sky. Then she was tossed on tumultuous waves, tasting brine in her mouth, her vision blinded by rough sands and the swirl of the sea.
"You cannot say no to me,"
Hai Xin said, and his voice swelled, thunderous as an ocean storm.
"I take what I want."
After it was over, Hai Xin disappeared. His weight was heavy upon her, and then it was gone. Mei Feng lay on the ground for some time, unable to move. The tall grasses swayed beside her, whispering, a consolation. Finally, she forced herself onto her feet and somehow managed to stand. Her legs shook, knocking against each other as she tried to straighten her silk skirt. A sleeve had been ripped at the shoulder, and several peach panels torn from the tunic. She attempted to retie the embroidered belt around her waist, but her fingers trembled too much. Instead, she smoothed her hair, tucking loose strands behind her ears, and picked a few rough stalks of grass from her locks. Her heart felt constricted, and she could not take a full breath. Suddenly, the air before her shimmered, and her body went rigid, terrified it was Hai Xin again. But it was a woman instead, tall and regal, clad in a flowing white dress. Her black hair was arranged in high, elaborate loops woven with emeralds, and a silver crown rested against her brow. She was more beautiful than any woman Mei Feng had ever seen, with perfect features, reminding her of the statues hewn of gods. She realized then who this woman was, and fell to her knees.
"Goddess of purity,"
she said, barely above a whisper. Mei Feng had prayed to her for guidance, and the goddess had come to comfort her. She had witnessed this cruel act, this terrible misdeed by another god. The goddess had come to make things right.
"How dare you utter my name?"
The goddess of purity spoke in a clear voice, as cold and cutting as glass. Mei Feng's head jerked up, confused.
"I pulled the strings of fate, chose you myself to be delivered to the Emperor as a new bride," the goddess said, "and you let yourself be defiled instead. Who will want you now?"
Mei Feng leaped to her feet, arms thrust forward, palms open in supplication.
"Goddess, no! I didn't want this! I tried to fight!"
Did you say no?
I did, Mei Feng replied with vehemence. I tried to push him off.
The tears finally came, hot against her cheeks, and a sob tore through her sore, battered body.
But I didn't have enough strength.
Did you refuse him during his first visit?
The goddess arched one black brow. Did you say no during his second? Mei Feng stared at the goddess of purity, suddenly understanding.
It is not my fault.
She dashed her tears away in an angry gesture.
You cannot blame me for this.
Oh? The goddess raised her arms in a graceful arc, expanding, growing to twice her size. She towered over Mei Feng.
How dare you, pathetic mortal girl, presume to look upon a god, much less consort with one? You were blessed with beauty, and used it to lure an immortal's attention.
Mei Feng shook her head, unable to speak, unable to believe what she was hearing.
You will be punished for reaching so high, girl, for letting a god spill his seed in you.
She pointed a finger at Mei Feng. Her body stiffened, and pain arced through it. Agony racked her mind and her soul, her flesh. Mei Feng's blood boiled, and she fell face down into the dirt, burning pain radiating from her legs. She cried out, but no sound came. Pushing herself onto her hands, she tried to rise. She watched in horror as the flesh of her arms turned green, the color of mold, and her skin blistered with pockmarks and warts.
What is happening?
She growled. Her voice had turned thick and gravelly, monstrous.
Fitting punishment, the goddess replied.
Something hissed behind her ears, tugging at her scalp. Mei Feng swatted at her hair, but it had disappeared. She grasped the thick body of a snake instead, and it writhed in her palm, sinking its fangs into her wrist.
No,
she said, and heard hundreds of serpents hiss in unison, felt them wrench against her head. She tried to go to the goddess, to plead again for her innocence, and slithered toward the immortal, only realizing then she no longer had legs. The goddess of purity smiled a serene smile.
Fitting punishment, indeed.
She conjured a large, bronzed mirror and held it toward Mei Feng.
You are now as ugly and horrifying as you were once beautiful and alluring.
Mei Feng gaped at the image reflected back at her. Her face had turned a putrid green, lumpy with warts. Her eyes had become sunken holes, the orbs pure black. They stared back at her without any trace of humanity, of feeling. Black snakes writhed where her long raven hair had been, undulating, fangs bared. She reared back from the goddess, dropping the mirror. It thudded to the ground.
Beautiful Phoenix doesn't seem such an appropriate name any longer, the goddess said. You will go by Mei Du from now on. Beautiful Venom. Although there is nothing pretty about you, is there? I do enjoy the irony.
The goddess turned her wrist in a flourish, and the mirror disappeared.
I thought I would let you gaze upon your own face this once, understand what you have become. But as a word of caution, I would avoid your own reflection from now on.
Mei Feng slid forward, throwing herself at the hem of the goddess's dress.
Please, lady, she rasped. Have mercy. I have done nothing wrong.
But when she looked up, the goddess was already gone, and the snake's hissing against her ear was her only reply. Mei Du fled in grief and terror after the goddess of purity inflicted her punishment. Not knowing where to go, where she could hide, she slithered through farms and terraced fields, passing small villages, or finding herself lost in large towns. Disoriented and confused, she left destruction in her wake. Stone statues of her victims marked a macabre tale of her travels. They were young and old, and from every class. Their only similarity, the horror forever etched into their gray features. One peasant woman had dropped to her knees, hands ripping at her own hair. A young scholar had been turned to stone with his arms thrust out, hands splayed, hoping to ward off an unspeakable evil. A small boy of 7 years had collapsed onto his side, legs drawn into his chest in a fetal position, mouth agape and eyes shut tight. But it had been too late. What was seen could not be unseen, Mei Du learned, when it came to the power of her gaze. It didn't take long for her infamy to spread. Soon, mobs were chasing her, wielding spears and axes, the farmers carrying heavy spades or pitchforks. Their legs were no match for the power and speed of her serpentine coil, but sometimes they managed to corner her, and she had no choice but to look in their eyes to survive. It never took more than three people turned to stone before the crowds would retreat, screaming curses and obscenities, or moaning in sorrow and fear. They cast flaming torches at her, burning the green scales of her serpent body and blistering the thick, pocked skin of her torso and arms. Expert archers shot at her from afar, puncturing her abdomen and back. She wrenched those arrows out and threw them aside. Her wounds healed almost instantly. Mei Du's curse had been to live in this mortal realm, not to die. Her punishment was to suffer in her monstrosity and solitude, to cause death and wreak havoc, inflict tragedy and terror. Months slid into years, and the years slid into oblivion. In the beginning, she missed her home, her family, wondered if they grieved for her, grateful that they would never know her terrible fate. But then her loved ones' faces began to blur and fade, as did the details of her mortal life. Sometimes a small memory would emerge, like desert winds revealing a long-forgotten treasure in the sand, the fragrant scent of jasmine tea, a lone lotus perched on a deep green leaf in a tranquil pond, or the sound of laughter drifting over a high manor wall, stirred something wistful within Mei Du's chest. These shining, scattered moments from another life always left her feeling bereft. As time wore on, those remembrances disappeared, and as people continued to hunt her with sticks and knives and axes, as they continued to taunt her with curses and slurs, she began to look each and every one of them in the eyes, instead of averting her gaze. She took pleasure in turning their contempt into stone. Mei Du knew that she would live long, reviled, and hated. It was as the goddess had wished it. Then, that fateful day, the one prophesied to slay her finally found her. Mei Du crouched motionless behind a thick pillar. There were 10 in the abandoned temple, rising to the tall roof like sentinels. The red and gold paint on them had long since flaked off. She wanted a glimpse of this glorified hero who the mortals were convinced could end her. The dust dissipated to reveal a young man not yet 20 years, holding a sword in one hand and a shield in the other, with a majestic eagle etched upon it. Both the sword and shield gleamed, polished to a mirrored shine. But it wasn't this that caught Mei Du's attention, not the young man's height nor the taut muscles of his bare arms. It was the faint glow that limned his frame. There was no mistaking it. The god of the sea had held the same inner light. This young man was no mere mortal. He was divine, or touched by a god somehow. Blood roared in her ears, and she slid back, her long serpent coil whispering against the stone floor. Fear gripped her as those encounters with the god disguised as Hai Xin erupted again. Memories she had buried long ago had forced herself to forget. She trembled, a tremor that vibrated to the tip of her tail. The young man turned his head in her direction, his hand gripping the sword tighter. His black hair was pulled back in a topknot, revealing strong cheekbones and the masculine cut of his jawline. He smelled of metal and sweat, and the bloodlust that had become so familiar to Mei Du over the centuries emanating from the men who hungered to kill her. The first time one had found Mei Du in an abandoned dwelling, she had hoped for help, understanding, some sort of salvation. She had hoped he had come to free her from this unfair curse cast by a vengeful goddess. But Mei Du's hope dwindled with each man who appeared, on purpose or accidental misfortune. It had dwindled with each encounter suffused with their fear and loathing, always screaming, sometimes fumbling for a sharp weapon, until she ended it by meeting their gaze. A few were so overcome with terror they shut their eyes. Those she sank her fangs into, tasting the bitter venom that filled her mouth. Wild animals would come later to eat the corpse. She never had to wait very long. But this would-be hero was different, as the rumors had declared. She could feel it in her bones, just as she could taste the bright scent of him in the air. He was god-touched somehow. Perhaps the goddess of purity had sent him as a test, or the god of the sea as an envoy to reclaim what he never should have taken so brutally in the first place. Maydew didn't know, but she saw again in her mind's eye the innocent girl struggling to her feet, legs shaking as she tried to rearrange her torn skirt. Maydew felt again that girl's pain and confusion, horror and heartache. Rage filled her, as hot as the torches that have been thrown over the years, blistering her skin and scorching her scales. She waited for the intruder's gaze to turn in another direction, and in that instant slithered across the temple behind another pillar, faster than he could blink. Hissing deep, the sound reverberated through the vast space, and the man stiffened. Sweat gathered at his brow, and she at last tasted his fear in the air, sharp and sour. She felt a spike of pleasure from the scent. Perhaps she'd take her time, tease him as a snake would her prey. God-touched or not, this man would die like all the others, screaming in agony and regret. The intruder edged farther into the temple, sword raised, his silver shield lifted at chest height. His movements were assured, powerful, yet he kept his head lowered and his gaze averted. Maydew grinned, the act so unnatural it felt as if her face had split, cracking the pustules and thick scales of her cheeks. The man slipped behind a pillar, and she slithered to the lone statue that still stood, the goddess of purity. She hissed again and circled the sculpture, taunting the intruder. She caught a brief glimpse of the angry serpents on her head reflected on his shield. The man had skulked closer, hiding behind another pillar. Maydew screamed, a guttural and primal sound, then thrust her shoulder against the goddess statue. It teetered, groaning as it swayed. She shoved it with both hands, and it crashed uproariously. Good riddance, she thought, as dust rose. Knowing the man's vision would be obscured, she seized the opportunity and slid to where he hid, her heightened sense of smell revealing to her exactly where he cowered. She slid toward him within a breath, but was surprised to see the intruder disappear as swift as the wind behind another pillar, the thick air shrouding him. Maydew lunged forward, anger and hurt coiled heavy in her chest. She scrabbled on her hands low to the ground before rising high on her serpent coil to meet her enemy, to look him in the eyes. The slightest breeze stirred behind her. She whirled, fangs bared. A flash of silver, too late, and a thin whistle as the blade fell. Then darkness veiled her. Benjamin Alderson's Villain Challenge to Cindy Pawn. Medusa, go. Without the evil in the world, how do we see the good? By Benjamin Alderson. For me, villains are extremely important factors in young adult literary fiction. Without them, how do we see the good in a novel? But there are some villains who aren't all evil, or at least didn't start out that way. My Yaya used to read Greek mythology to me as a child. Even when I was that young, Medusa interested me. Her story was different from the others. I never could understand why she was a villain. I bombarded my Yaya with questions, wondering why the goddess Athena blamed Medusa for the actions of Poseidon, the god of the sea. Was Medusa a villain or a victim? Cindy Pawn puts her own spin on Medusa in Beautiful Venom. An advocate for diverse fiction, she completely changed the Medusa character from the one we know from ancient Greek mythology and brought her into the 21st century in a new and unique way. Favorite part and line. Okay, Ben. Deep breath. This story just loved messing with my emotions, especially the conversation between Master Yang and Lady Jia while Mei Feng is having her portrait painted. The exchange is filled with humor and jests, and it left me clutching my stomach in laughter. That leads to my favorite line from the story. I am sure she is as fertile as a sow with 9 pairs of teats, is laced with sass and sarcasm, and is intended to shock Lady Mei. And it worked perfectly. I had a completely laugh-out-loud moment. Hilarious. Favorite character. Mei Feng, a.k.a. Mei Du. Throughout the whole story, my heart really went out to Mei Feng. First, she is being practically sold off to the Emperor by her family. Mom and Dad, get it together. Then she stumbles across this evil presence that is almost stalking her. Then the evil presence steals her innocence, and she is blamed for his actions. I mean, come on. I couldn't help but feel that this story is a reflection of modern views on rape, blaming the victim instead of prosecuting the villain. A very raw and honest representation, something I am really glad has been brought up in this young adult story, as it is we young adults who must take on this situation and talk about it. Most memorable moment. The conversation between Mei Feng and the Goddess of Purity. You would expect a goddess to be good and trustworthy, but Cindy completely flipped this. The way the Goddess of Purity deals with what Mei Feng has just been through is shocking. It really goes to show that although you are in a position of authority and are looked at as a good person, actions speak louder than words. And trust me, the Goddess of Purity has a lot to say. She is filled with bitterness and jealousy and portrays herself in the most perfect way as the evil being she is. Hero twist. At first, when we meet Hai Xin, I thought he was going to be the hero of the story. He came in, pulsing with power, and took Mei's breath away. I was like, oh yeah, hot love interest, you go Mei. Then I carried on reading, and boy, I did not see him being the god of the sea. To be honest with you all, he was more than a god. He was a jerk. I mean, hello, it makes perfect sense. This take on Medusa with an Asian twist was just perfect. Issues that are left open-ended and how I feel about that. The important issue that Cindy has highlighted so brilliantly is the way victims of rape are treated. In the story, Mei Feng is blamed and scolded for catching the eye of Hai Xin. The Goddess of Purity blames Mei Feng for Hai Xin's actions, but she is the victim. It is sad to say, but even in today's world, people have the same views as the Goddess of Purity when it comes to rape. Questions such as, what were you wearing? And did you say no? And what did you do to provoke it? Are asked to the victims of rape, instead of focusing on the criminal behind the act. Cindy deals with this in a sensitive, yet honest and raw way. Her story highlights the issue perfectly, presenting it to young readers. I hope you, as a reader, interpret this story in your own way, but still come together and talk about this issue. We must not ignore it. In conclusion, as a reader, I was able to fall into this story, if only it were 100,000 words longer. I am a huge lover of twists in stories, and the ending of Mei Feng's story definitely quenched my thirst for twists. I almost wish I could speak to Mei Feng, or write her a letter. I would start off by saying, "You're not alone." I would tell her she was not in the wrong and that there are people who would listen and believe her. It is important that victims of such events know they are not alone and they are not to blame. Mei Feng taught me that villains have stories too. Seeing their perspective gives me a better understanding of the characters, which helps me understand their actions. It takes the dark to see the light and the bad to see the good. But what drives both is a whole other story.
Death Knell by Victoria Schwab. 1. Death is a boy with brown eyes, a boy with bare feet and worn knees, and a shirt missing a button. a boy with copper hair and lashes that part like clouds. It is raining when he wakes at the bottom of the well. He is curled on his side, tucked in like a withered rose, and his body rustles in a papery way as he unfolds, back coming to rest against the mossy stone side of the well. He inhales, the air stale in his waking lungs, his pulse a low tap, tap beneath the storm as he holds out his hands to catch the drops of rain. Death has lovely hands, one smooth, the other skeletal, and water beads against his fingers. It drips between his bones. He looks up with those eyes the color of wet earth. He has seen them reflected, not in the well, for the well is empty, but in the places where water gathers after rain. They do not seem to belong to him, those eyes, though of course they do, set into his face like knots in an old tree. Young face, old eyes. Overhead, the rain slows, stops, turns to mist as he gets to his feet. He does not know how long he's been asleep, hours, days, weeks, but now he is awake, and he is cold, and he is hungry. Not a stew and potatoes kind of hunger. That is a thing he knows but doesn't know, but a purposeful hunger, a marrow missing from your bones, no blood in your veins, heart dragging itself along, kind of need. Death is awake, and so he is hungry. He is hungry, and so he is awake. He climbs slowly, steadily, out of the deep hole, fingers finding the holds. He swings a thin leg over the side of the well, sits for a drowsy moment on the stone lip. It is nice to be awake. Beyond the well, the world has changed again. It is always changing. One day he climbs out of the well to find the leaves green, and the next they are beginning to turn. He wakes more often in winter, sees bare trees, bare trees, bare trees for days on end. The summers are long and sleepy. Today the air is cool and damp, with the fair palate peculiar to spring. He swings his legs absently, knocking bare heels against the mossy rocks. He knows he cannot be the only death, but he is the death of this place, with its rolling hills and its rocky cliffs, its wind like music, and its old stone well. The hills spill away around him, one side leading to the sea and the other to a forest. And there, through the mist, beyond the woods, the subtle shadow of a town. On and on the world spills, waiting. Something clenches in his chest. A hungry heart. His feet hit the grass, and it begins to wither. The ground has gone to green again, the barren places where he'd stepped before now filled. Weeks, then. Maybe months. He tries to step on stones as he begins to walk. His strides are long. His steps are slow, but the distance falls away beneath him. He steps one foot down the hill and the next in the field, one foot in the field and the next in the forest, one foot in the forest and the next at the edge of the town. He takes another step, but his bare feet move forward a single stride. Solid, ordinary. That is how death knows he is close. The town, Fallow, that is the name on the wooden sign, is waking around him, men and women spilling from their homes, moving in a stream of bodies toward the church. He stops in the middle of the square and looks around, humming softly, the tune familiar, though he doesn't remember how, the words, if he'd ever known them, now lost. He is a stone in the river. It courses around him. Death slips into the crowd, tucking his hands, one flesh, one bone, into the worn pockets of his worn trousers. As he strolls down the lane, he plays a game with himself, trying to guess who it will be. The old man with his basket of bread, the young mother clutching her little boy's hand, the girl bobbing on her father's shoulders. Last time it was winter, and the life belonged to a man sound asleep. Before that, a pair of children too close to the cliffs. Before that, he cannot remember. He has lost